Yes, Dick Bentley and Jimmy Edwards will be on hand for the next 30 minutes with Wallace Eaton, Al McCogan, June Whitfield, and the keynotes, all inviting you to...
All right, Jimmy, I'll give it to you straight. If you want to know why you're not getting anywhere with June Whitfield, well, take a look at yourself. I've seen beetroot salads dressed better.
But I've got no time to bother with clothes. I live on a farm. I have to be up before it's light.
I gather that. Nobody would wear clothes like yours if they could see what they were putting on. People in town don't wear clothes cut like that.
But this is for country wear, Bentley. It's perfectly in order for a country suit to have a couple of slits at the back.
Not in the trousers. Jimmy, you've got to get yourself a new suit, something that will dazzle June.
Oh, I see. The new peacock Jim. But I wouldn't know what to choose.
Just leave it to me. I know what girls go for. I love it.
I love it too, but, we were talking about clothes.
Love it is clothes.
Oh, love it. Oh.
Yes, a sort of greeny material.
Oh, I know. My old D-mob suit was made of that.
Yeah?
But it had sort of reddish-brown squares on it, you know.
Reddish-brown squares?
Well, I kept it under the mattress and the bedspring was rusty.
No wonder you have trouble with your romantic affairs. Let's see what else. Tell you what, Pearl Grey goes with anything.
Well, don't shove her off onto me, Benji.
Jimmy. Oh, cool, old fella. A pearl grey suit.
Oh.
As it happens, I can sell you just the thing, plus all the accessories. I can let you have, really cheap, a pearl grey suit, a pair of fawn shoes, a blue striped shirt, and a BBC cricket club tie.
Bentley, I wouldn't be seen dead in that outfit.
Oh, dear. Well, do you know anybody else who would care to buy a pearl grey suit, a pair of fawn shoes, a blue striped
shirt?
No,
I don't know anybody.
Oh. Well, if I can't sell them, that's that.
What do you mean?
I'd better go and hand the suitcase into Lost Property.
Yes, yes.
A smile is worth a million tears when it comes from the one that you love. A smile is worth a million tears when it comes from a heart that is true. All you heartaches and cares seem to disappear. Peace of mind you will find when you love me near you. And come what may through all the years, you'll find a smile is worth a million tears. All you heartaches and cares seem to disappear. Peace of mind you will find when your love is near you. And come what may through all the years, you'll find a smile is worth a million, just a million tears.
Watch her, Jim. I've just been out to buy something to help the missus keep her clothes nice and tidy. I got a couple of them hangers.
Which hangers?
Aeroplane hangers. Oh, you've never seen so many clothes as she's got, Jim. And with all that, she was an happier woman when the only evening dress she had was pyjamas.
Poor old wealthy Walt. If your wife still hankers after her old friends, why not take her back to the buildings for a visit?
I've tried it, Jim. Oh. What a sensation we caused when we drove up in our big new car with the four chauffeurs.
Four chauffeurs?
Yes, one for each gear. When the missus stepped out and saw the buildings again, oh, I never seen a woman so overcome with memories. She just fell in a heap.
Really?
Yes, you remember that heap by the back door?
Well, didn't it make you a bit sentimental seeing all the buildings people again?
Well, I'll say this, Mr. B. I found it very difficult to drive away from the old place.
You really did?
Yes. They'd pinched the car wheels, the seats, and the best part, the engine.
Well, another little suggestion. Why don't you try taking your wife completely away for a long holiday?
That's an idea.
We've been studying holidays, haven't we, Dunners?
Oh, yes, sir. Particularly that BBC program which urges people to try taking unusual holidays. It goes something like this.
Why not have a different sort of holiday this year? Let's listen to some people who used their imagination last summer and spent holidays they'll remember all their lives.
I was right up the canal last summer. I went from Rotherhithe to Attercliffe with a load of fertiliser. It was one of those holidays where you all have to muck in. But it was full of excitement. I had with me Sonia, the girl I go friends with, but she left rather suddenly due to standing up when we were going under a low bridge. I had always chaffed her about being tall. Another incident that springs to mind is when the horse tripped over a young couple on the bank and fell in the canal. But we pressed on regardless, and I treasure every minute, even though my neck still bears the marks of the tow rope. Good night.
And here's somebody else who threw conventions to the wind and found a really unusual summer holiday.
I have always been deeply fascinated by British folk music. So, for me, it was hay for the open road and a fig for Bognor Regis. With my trusty recording machine, I sought out the old country folk who still remember the songs their fathers handed down. Here's a sample of my treasure trove.
Well, sir, well, now, this be a song my old dad used to sing when I were a babby, waking up in the night, fretful, as you might say. Oh, rot you and perish you, you squalling young pup. I'll bash your small face in if you don't build up.
Oh, yes, quite exquisite, yes. Have you anything even older?
I mind my old granddad. He were always a singing. And this be the song he always sang when he were a singing. Oh, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Yes, what strange words, yes. But why did he sing that?
He were balmy. he were a daft old flogabob.
Flobbergobby, you mean?
Flobbergobby, it's a word round here means barmy, you know, and kind of ninny-faced, as you might say. Here, mister, would you like I to sing ye the traditional old Bassetshire hay-making lute?
Oh, please, yes, do oblige with it.
I will, a singing, you know, or stew in a matter, come harvest. Like this. Oh, Eli, don't be so unkind. You've just stuck your pitchfork right...
Stop! Yes. Rather difficult. I've got no more room on my recording tape.
What a pity.
Thank you, and a good night.
Life's talking point. Once again, we meet the Glums, our family of ordinary people facing life squarely. Today, their talking point is, if the child is father of the man, who's going to be mother? So, over to the Glums.
How wrong! I can read you like a book when you've got that mischievous expression on your face and your cap on one side. Oh, it means beware. Wrong?
see.
Oh, Ron, life could never be dull with you and your pranks. Oh, don't make me laugh too much tonight, Ron, because I'll lose my earrings again. Now, tell me what you've done, you imp.
I've had all me hair cut off, eh?
Ron, take your cap off. Oh, Ron, what have you done to yourself?
I've had a crew cut, eh?
A crew cut? But, Ron, it makes you look completely different. I never realized before you had so much face.
Sorry, eh?
Whatever made you have it?
I wanted something different.
I think you've spoilt your whole looks. You've no right to do it without consulting me. The whole object of being engaged is to do things together.
Right, are we?
No, I didn't mean that.
Go on, Eth, just a kiss.
Oh, no,
yes.
Ron, not now. Your hair's rasping my cheek.
Well, oh.
Hello, hello, hello. What, oh, Eth, Ron shoving his clock forward again. I shan't interrupt the revels. Here, Ron, pass me over your mum's spare set of dentures, will you? I must get myself a proper pair of pliers. They're in the drawer of the table. Ron, I told you what would happen if you looked over the hedge where Mr. Wilson was clipping it.
No, Mr. Glum. Ron's gone and had himself a crew cut.
You mean, Ron, you had that done on purpose? Let's have a closer butcher's. Oh, I don't mind telling you, Ron, this has upset me. Suddenly seeing you with your hair cropped close like that, it's brought back 6 months of my life I thought I'd forgotten. Ron, have you seen yourself in the mirror?
No, Dad.
This is going to give his mother a nasty shock. She was always so proud of our Ron's lovely curlies, as she called them. And he was a curly baby, he was.
Yes.
Had all them baby teasy wheezes on his nut. She washed them regular every Friday over the enamel basin. Him and the dog at the same time.
Oh, dear. It will give her a fright when she sees him then.
I know. Scare the daylights out of the dog and all, I speak. Ron, I'm not breaking the news to your mother. You go yourself and show her what you look like. She's upstairs cleaning the bedroom windows. Go on, just go up and poke your head round the door.
Yes, Dad.
Oh, Ethel, I don't know what she'll say when she sees young Porcupine Bonce. You better cover up your ear holes. You know her, she's liable to get very down to earth.
Oh, poor Ron.
He should be at the door by now.
Hello, Mum.
There you are, it. You can't get down to earth quicker than that, can you, eh?
There once was a clockmaker in London town. He was a handsome young man of renown. A clock fixing Romeo, dashing and neat. Ladies would sigh as he came down the street singing Peck-a-lum-a-lum-a-doo-lum-dum, Peck-a-lum-a-doo-lay. I wind them by night and I mend them by day. Ding-dong, ding-dong, I wind them by night and I mend them by day. Fair maidens would break up the clock now and then, so he would have to come fix it again.
The men folk somehow never quite understood why he kept coming to their neighborhood
singing Peck-a-lum-a-lum-a-doo-lum-dum, Peck-a-lum-a-doo-lay. I wind them by night and I mend them by day. So if you've got a girl with a clock on the shelf, should the clock break, better fix it yourself. Don't let her go near any clock-fixing guy. night and by night, and I met him by day. Ding dong,
ding dong,
ding dong,
ding dong.
I wind up by night, and I met him by day.
Waiter, three more brandies and soda, please. I say, Bentley, you ever read Will?
No, Your Grace. I used to read teacups.
Oh, I meant to...
Wait, Your Grace, that's right. Go on.
I meant H.G. Wells.
Oh.
Wrote this story about the invisible man. You ever thought about that, Edwards? You think it's possible for a chap to drink something and then become completely invisible?
Oh, yes, Your Grace. You should see Bentley at the pub when it's his round. But you know, Gracie...
Yes.
The idea of a man becoming invisible does make a rattling good story. In fact, Your Grace, if you'll stand by, we'll rattle it again.
This whole strange affair starts at the London house of Major Adrian Dawlish and his lovely wife, Claire. They have just finished dinner.
Something's wrong, isn't it, Adrian? You've been very quiet all evening and... you've hardly touched your sweet.
I'm sorry, my sweet. Claire, cast your mind back. Do you remember a fellow called Clapper?
Clapper? That does ring a bell.
Jim Clapper. He was my batman during the war. Last I heard from him was a letter in 47. Said he was now working in a chemist's shop. And if ever I was down his way, he'd see me all right for centipods.
Oh. Well, dear, if tea gets any dearer, it might be worth considering.
Claire, this afternoon, Clapper rang me. He seemed very distressed and frightened. He asked if he'd see me this evening. He suggested tennis.
Which you haven't played for years.
Claire.
But what could have happened to him to phone you up like that and...
Is that the front door?
No, it's the back door. The front door's Wagner. Well, if that is Clapper, I'd better leave you alone with him, Adrian. I'll be in the kitchen. I'll take off this dress and put on a jug of coffee.
All right. Coming. Well, hello, old boy. Do come... I say, there's nobody here. I can't see anybody.
That's what I wanted to talk to you about, Major.
Clapper! It's your voice, but where are you?
Right in front of you, Major, on the doormat. Begging your pardon, Major, and meaning no disrespect, I'm invisible.
Invisible? I don't believe it. It's a trick. Prove you're invisible. Do something to prove that you are actually standing there. Clapper, release my nose.
I'm sorry, sir. I meant no disrespect, sir. Only dire necessity would make me grip an officer's conch. Do you believe I'm invisible now, Major?
Well, I've got to, but I mean, this is incredible. You'd better come in.
Begging your pardon, sir, I've come in, sir. I'm behind you now.
What?
Major, what am I going to do? It's horrible, this being an invisible.
Now, look here, Clapper. To start with... how did you happen to become invisible? I mean, was it something you ate?
Well, in a way, sir, yes, it was, in a way, sir. You see, it was this afternoon, Major, you see. You know as I work in this chemist shop, so as I explained to you in my letter,
sir. You did indeed, yes, sir.
Well, I had a slack hour this afternoon, you see, so I popped in the dispensary and made myself a sort of a cocktail.
Cocktail?
Yes, sir. A drop of Mrs. Uggerty's nerve tonic, a spoonful of calamine lotion, flowers of sulphur, halibut liver oil, bath essence, and so on and so on. I just took them as they come to me, you see. And I drank it down, and the next thing, Jim's been faded out.
Yes, but what caused it?
Who knows? I can only suppose I must have went a bit heavy on the vanishing cream. Oh, I can tell you frankly, sir, I was in a bit of a state till I thought of you. It's very good of you to see me.
But I can't see you. Now, look here, Clapper. At all costs, we must think rationally. Put a cake on your head.
Eh?
Yes, that large fruit cake on the table. Now, if you put it on your head, I can pinpoint your position in the room.
Like this, sir?
Yep, that's it.
Darling, I'm bringing in some coffee.
Good heavens, I'd forgotten about Claire.
Oh, thank you, darling. I hope you finished your... You know, I thought I put too much self-raising flour in that...
Too much... Clapper, where's your manners? You might at least raise your fruitcake when a lady enters the room.
Very sorry, sir. Sorry, sir.
Adrian. Adrian, to whom are you talking?
It's me, ma'am. The Invisible Jim.
Who?
It's no use staring, madam. It's quite impossible to see me with the, if you'll pardon the coarseness, unclothed eye.
Oh, I don't believe it. It's a trick. Adrian, are you pulling my leg?
No, it's me, Mrs. It's just... Oh, please, madam, please, I beg you, let me stay here. I can make myself handy round the house. I used to do all the major's mending. Now I can do invisible mending.
Oh, of course you can stay here, Clapper. And try not to brood about being transparent. It may not be so bad as all that.
Well, it's all... Well, I suppose now you come to mention, I suppose invisibility can have its bright side. Yeah, for instance, I can now sit bang in front of the telly without blocking anybody's view. And if I spit in the underground, they'll find the bloke next to me. And think of the pennies I'll save on flag days. Yes. Yes, I think I'm going to enjoy this invisible lark.
I'm sorry, Adrian. It's now a fortnight since your friend Mr. Clapper arrived here, and I can't stand much more of it.
It happened again this morning?
Yes. I went in to run my bath when I noticed just in time. The bathroom scales were registering 17 stone. Adrian, things have got worse since he started going out on those mysterious little jaunts. Where does he get to? What does he do?
Haven't you seen the evening papers? Look at the headline. Strange happenings in London. Is it ghosts?
Oh, show me. When Mr. Richard Bentley, the well-known broadcaster, was walking along Bond Street yesterday, some mysterious force removed a manhole cover from right in front of him. Mr. Bentley disappeared and did not emerge until Gravesend.
Dreadful, isn't it? And look at this. When asked why they lost the boat race, the Oxford Stroke said the boat felt for all the world as though there was an extra man sitting on the bows.
Too much.
Yes, well, I'm going to turf him out, Claire.
Oh,
possibly. Just wait till he comes in.
Oh, you're right.
I've been in all the time.
Oh, look. See.
Oh, you didn't notice the level of the whiskey in the decanter going down on its own, did you?
Clapper, now listen once and for all. This has got to stop. You've grossly abused our hospitality. I'm going to give you the good hiding you deserve.
Don't soil your fists on him, Adrian.
By gad, I'll horsewhip him.
You don't have to do that. Withdraw the whip. I'm going anyway. I've got a few more larks to get up to. I just thought of a very good one. Ta-ra for now, chum. I'm off. Oh, I ain't got nobody.
Adrian? Adrian?
Hmm? What, darling?
I've been worrying. Were we wrong in turning Clapper out on a night like this? You know, he's nowhere to go.
Oh, darling, look, he brought it upon himself. Now go back to sleep.
Oh, but it's such a cold night for poor Clapper to be...
Well, let's worry about it in the morning. Look, I'll push the hot water bottle over to your side. Now go to sleep.
Oh, but poor Clapper, it's raining out and I
darling,
just
leave
feel...
it till morning. Get some sleep now.
Oh, but I can't help thinking of that poor wretch.
Look, dear, if you don't shut up, will none of us get any sleep.
Clapper!
Good night all.
And Anna Binowitz and the augmented BBC Review Orchestra bring our recorded show to a close. Those involved were Dick Bentley and Professor Jimmy Edwards. Encouraged by Wallace Eaton, Alma Cogan, June Whitfield and the keynotes. David Dunhill was the announcer. Frank Muir and Dennis Norden wrote the script. And the programme was produced by Charles Maxwell. We all invite you to tune in again next week and...
Take it from...